Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 27th of January. Very nice to have you with us. And it is, you know, maybe you're digging out from a little snow or maybe you were spared. I don't know. But hopefully you're safe where you are. And we're glad you're with us this morning. That's really what counts. Let me introduce everybody to you and we'll get started. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. All right. No Alan. Okay. We'll try again later. Times Union columnist Chris.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Here. You got to press the red button. We all know that. Sorry about that. I'm fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, good morning to you. Good to have
you
here.
And good morning to you. Always press the red button.
Okay. Press the red button.
Thank God Alan's not the president. President.
Hey, cool football. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is here. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Yeah. Hey. Good morning. I don't seem to have a red button. Should I? Yeah. I'm worried about this.
You don't need yours yet.
Oh, okay.
Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Bob Griffin. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, everybody. It's an honor to be here, as always.
Always love having you here. Thank you. Immigration attorney and associate with the Albany Law Firm. You're a partner now, right? I have to take the associate word out. You're a partner now.
Yes, I'm getting used to it as well.
Yes, excellent. The Albany Law Firm of Whiteman, Osterman, and Hannah, Sienna Freeman Tolbert, thank you very much for being here. Great to have you on the program, and a lot to talk about this morning, so we will get started. And I guess, just as good a place as any is to talk about the vote yesterday on impeachment, as far as the number of Republicans that voted, and it was only five. And so if there's any traction to the impeachment of the former president of the United States, it's going to take 17 to convict. And so they got five. And the big question was Mitch McConnell. What's Mitch McConnell going to do? Now, this was a procedural early vote, but most say it's a bellwether of what is to come following the weeks and weeks of the trial that we will endure that will probably give us the exact same answer that we got during the vote yesterday. Is that correct, Alan, basically?
Well, you know, look, these people are reprehensible. I'm not talking about the five. I'm talking about the other ones. They have got to understand that they will be held accountable either in this world or the next one for what they've been doing, which is to be as far from being the patriot that they always claim they are to where they are. So, yes, it does look, Joe, like there's not going to be a conviction here unless something miraculous happens. And there should be, because this guy, Trump, what we're saying is on your last day, you could do something, the worst thing in the world, and you couldn't be held responsible because you're president. And then when you're out, you can't be held responsible either. These people are disgusting.
Bob Griffin, the big question is, if this is an impeachable, what is? So I leave that question to you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, too, Joe. I mean, what do you need to do in order to be impeached? And if the Senate isn't going to act, then I put a call out right now to the rest of us that we start the process of a change in the Constitution. We can't afford for people to come into the presidency thinking that they're above the law. And we are sending, that's exactly the message that we're sending right now.
Exactly.
I hope the trial moves forward. I think all of the evidence needs to be both on the record, but as part of the permanent record of this administration. I think the folks that vote against this after seeing some of the evidence need to be held accountable during their elections.
Well,
hey, they were there. They saw the whole thing. They heard people yelling, "Get Mike Pence, get him." Or get Nancy Pelosi. And they were sitting there, and yet they are cowards. They have no backbone, and they've got almost no morality as far as I can tell.
Chris Churchill.
Can you,
go ahead,
Alan. I'm sorry. Before you jump, I'm sorry, Chris. This one thought. they talk about reconciliation, and I'm all for unity and reconciliation, but for the vast majority of us, reconciliation will only occur after there's justice. So this idea that we can just paper this over and move on and then move into reconciliation, it's like covering a festering wound. It's not until you clean it out, we're not going to heal.
Now,
sorry,
when you
Chris.
When you say reconciliation, you don't mean budgetary reconciliation. You mean getting together and, right? I mean, there's a big difference.
I mean, coming together as a country, understanding that there's always going to be fringe, but the fringe needs to be fringe rather than mainstream.
Right, because now when we're talking reconciliation, it usually means, in the common political parlance, this business about if it has something to do with the budget, then you just need a majority vote. I'm sorry, Chris, your turn.
I was taking it as the Catholic sense, too. That's the other way. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I guess the big question, kind of Bob already touched on this, the big question is whether or not to move forward with the trial, right? I mean, you can make a good case now that doing so would be pointless. You can also make a good case that having everything on the record and out there for everybody to see and to judge, that there's value to that process. But, my worry about this is that it ends with an acquittal and it comes off looking like another victory for Donald Trump. And it looks like, it almost revives him. I think at the moment he's left office in disgrace with his tail between his legs. And I think there's a danger here that by putting him front and center again, you're kind of elevating him again. I don't know if anybody else feels that way, but...
No, I do. I agree with you. And also, Stan, I want your thoughts. I just real quick, I mean, okay. the other case here is that we have, I mean, the guy who's overseeing the trial is in the hospital now too, which so that enters into this as to what's going to happen forward. Sienna, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that I think it's important that they move forward with the trial, and they will move forward with the trial because I think it's going to hold the Senate Republicans up to a higher accountability after you put forth the evidence. This impeachment trial is going to look completely different from the first one, right? The first time the Senate majority was able to not allow the subpoenaing of witnesses and evidence, and none of that happened during the first impeachment trial. We just had debate, from both sides. This impeachment trial, I believe the rules are going to allow witnesses to come in. They're going to allow evidence to come in. And I think it's going to be raised to a higher level. Furthermore, I really, really am empowered by what's going on with the U.S. attorney in D.C., who is looking at sedition charges right now for some of the individuals, going as far as people who spoke at the rally the day before. This leads me to believe that even if Trump is acquitted by the Senate, there are still federal criminal charges that you can look at. And I don't know, because it happened during his presidency, I don't know where that's going to fall in the prosecution, but I think things are happening, and I don't think Trump's going to walk away from this scot-free. I mean, he still has other cases, criminal cases, coming up against him, so I think he's going to be busy in the court of law for the next few years, and I think people are forgetting about that aspect of it as well.
And I say amen.
Mm-hmm. Chris, anything else on that?
Well, I also worry about a political backlash. I think to some segment of the American people, it's going to look like, why are they focusing on Trump in February when he's already been banished from the presidency, and the nation is experiencing a crisis? On the one hand, I think this is what he did was certainly impeachable and deserves to be. There should be consequences for that, but I certainly have mixed feelings about it. I think it's risky. I think there are dangers to this.
Too late. The horse.
It's not too late. They don't have to have a trial. I mean, they could hold it off.
They're not going to do that. The horse is out of the
barn. I know they're not going to do that, but they certainly could.
Well, come on. This kind of apologia for a crooked president is not warranted, in my view. You know how much respect I have for you, Chris, and you're a great columnist, but you're just not right on this. We need to hold him up to the light of public opinion, because otherwise, what about the kid who robs the grocery store? I mean, who's above the law here?
Yeah, but he's not going to be convicted. There isn't going to be no punishment here. I mean, the avenues that Sienna was talking about are probably more relevant to actually get some sort of consequences. Nothing's going to come with this. We know that. It's predetermined. So that raises the question. I mean, if you are, you know, a lawyer could speak to this better than I could, but if you're bringing a case that you know you're going to lose, a lot of times lawyers choose not to bring the case.
I brought up this point yesterday, and we've been talking about it a little bit throughout the last week or two, and that is, Sienna, that as you present the evidence, as you go forward with this, that we find out more about what happened on January 6, 2021. And as we find out more of what happened, that the case becomes larger and more concerning, and there would be a chance that you could get that additional 12 senators on your side. Your thought on that?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I was reading the bios for the House impeachment managers, and they're all attorneys. Some of them are prosecutors. And I think they're ready to address first the constitutional issue that the Senate voted on yesterday, right, where they voted that it wasn't constitutionally that they could not impeach them, which is ridiculous. But they voted on that yesterday, but they did not vote on whether or not he incited insurrection. And that's very important to note. They did not put their necks out yesterday to determine that. They said that based on the Constitution, they didn't think they were no longer able to convict him because he was out of office.
Right.
I think it's important that that's where they put their necks out. They did not say that he did not incite insurrection, and that's going to be a harder statement, a harder line for them to draw after you put forth the evidence and the witnesses.
And isn't
so that, I think that's going to be where we see more of this.
And Bob, that's a much different defense, right? I mean, you're not saying, as you did the last time around, that it was the perfect phone call and it was great and everything was fine. No, you have people who are now saying, yes, this happened, it was wrong, but we don't think it's constitutional that we impeach a president who has already left office.
Hey, a couple thoughts here. One is that, I mean, the Senate does feel like the guy standing in front of the exploding building telling the rest of us there's nothing to see here, move along. I do.
They're voting in the crime scene. That was what was struck me yesterday. That was where they were.
And the fact that some of them added gasoline to the fire themselves, I think, you know, it makes it inappropriate for someone like Ted Cruz or Hawley to be voting on this thing. I mean, they should be facing their own trials, if you're asking for my opinion. I also find it interesting. I mean, there's a certain level of hypocrisy, too. If you think about Rand Paul, you know, Rand Paul has continued to take legal action against his neighbor for the disagreement and assault, but he's going to let Trump and the insurrectionists walk free without any legal jeopardy. It's sort of like, why is it good enough for you to be using the court systems and then not allowing the rest of us?
Great point. I think that the neighbor is looking better and better all the time.
Alan, I can't hear you.
Oh, what? Oh, I know why. Okay. I think it's, you know, I'm all for the, I just wanted to make the point, I'm all for the neighbor. I wasn't in the beginning, you know, I had questions about, is it appropriate to come over the line and beat somebody up? But I've changed my mind.
We got that settled. Paula says, so 45 Republican senators voted to drop the case against the guy who sent a mob in to kill them. Would anyone ask a judge to drop charges for trying to kill a family member? If Republicans want to all of a sudden show unity and have Congress come together like they say they do, then stick up for your fellow lawmakers, regardless of party affiliation. Well, right. But
and so I just want to jump in real quick and say, but that's the difference, right, is when you go into court, the first thing the court determines is whether they have jurisdiction, whether they can have standing, whether you have the right to bring this lawsuit. And that's what the senators did yesterday. Basically, the Senate Republicans said, I don't think they have standing. I don't think we have jurisdiction. We can't cover this. And that's all they did. They didn't get to the facts and the merits of the case. So that's important to note.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, yeah, I was going to agree with that and also say that, you know, that is an open question, whether or not they do have jurisdiction. I mean, there is disagreement about it. There is an argument to be made on both sides. It's not unreasonable to say that impeaching somebody who's already out of office is not what the Constitution implies.
So, Chris, what happens if on the last day of his term he does something really criminal and despicable? Obviously, you can't hold him responsible for, on so many levels because of what the Justice Department memo on that matter says. But what do you do then?
No, I actually don't. I think that's a misreading of the Justice Department memo. If somebody does something, you may not be able to hold them accountable while they're in office, but there's nothing preventing criminal charges once the person has left office. I mean, that's what Sienna was getting at earlier when she was talking about some of the prosecutors in the District of Columbia. They can still go. I mean, whether or not this impeachment really has nothing to do with, you know, not holding the people who rioted and the people responsible for the rioting accountable. I mean, all of the people many of the people who were involved in that riot are going to be charged, as they should be. I just don't think that. I mean, if a president commits a crime on his last day in office, you charge him with that crime. Impeachment may be warranted, but it's not necessarily the way to go.
Boy, do we disagree.
Well, the Constitution allows for two remedies with a conviction. They allow for removal and allows for disqualification from future office, running for future office. And I think the disqualification piece is what it makes scholars think are open to the fact that you are allowed to convict somebody once they're out of office, because that disqualification piece will come in as a further remedy when they're out of office. Otherwise, as Alan was saying, that you would just have people doing elected officials resigning really quickly, so they wouldn't be convicted by the Senate or by the governing body. And then you're taking away mm-hmm. anyone's right to prosecute them. So you want to, you know, resignation is not a form of relief for presidents. So they can still convict them after you resign. And Nixon, they didn't, but they could have still convicted him.
And they didn't because of the pardon.
Qualified him.
Right.
And they didn't because of the
exactly.
pardon.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we can continue this conversation, and we will. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, Sienna Freeman Tolbert, and of course we do welcome your letters. We ask you that you keep them short and to the point. We have a lot of them this morning and we want to get to as many as possible. So just make them brief. Send them to panel at wamc.org and we'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Sienna Freeman Tolbert making up the panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. So let's go to a few letters here as we continue discussing this particular issue. Garrett says, I'm hoping this vote was theater to give the GOP cover. Once the evidence is presented, if they still cower behind his base, then their complicity is cast in stone. In the future, should the conviction phase move to the courts? Sienna?
Get your rock hammer out.
What?
Get your rock hammer out.
Yeah.
Let's see. Deborah.
I think it will move to the courts.
Go ahead.
I think it will move to the courts. And I also think that I was thinking about this over the break, is we also have to remember that there is a dissatisfaction with Trump and his own party right now from some of the people that were there or who are being charged right now for the riots. And so it will be interesting to see is whether or not the Democrats can get them as witnesses and get them on the stand to say that they felt like they were ordered by President Trump to go down to the Capitol building. So I'm interested in that aspect of the trial. I think there's going to be some really good good witnesses coming out of it.
James,
because a lot of them are working with are being charged by the DOJ now.
And we should remember that there is precedent here, not for presidents, but for other people in the past who have been impeached after the fact. So it is the court would have to reverse all of that in order to make new law, right?
That is correct. That is correct. And there are a lot of states who have the same impeachment laws in their books, very similar to the Constitution, and they also allow it for afterwards. So there's a lot of good arguments, strong arguments in favor of impeaching after they left the office. And I think the trial is going to be more persuasive than we think.
Is the strongest argument for the Democrats and even the Republicans that yes, you hold this man to account for the actions, but also the second, which perhaps, and I'm asking this as a question, is this the most important part, that he can never run again? Chris?
Say that again? Is that the most important part?
Yeah, as far as motive for both Democrats and Republicans, I mean, if Republicans do come around, is that what we're getting at here, is to keep him from ever running again?
Well, I mean, I think that is the motivation of a lot of the people who are pushing this, for absolutely. Is that the most important thing? I kind of doubt it. First of all, I believe that takes a second vote, right? That isn't automatic.
One is two-thirds. The first one to convict is two-thirds, and the other one is a straight majority.
You know, secondly, I don't, he may run again. I think he's politically dead at this point. I mean, who knows what the future could bring, I suppose, but I don't really see that as a big concern, him running again. And I, you know, that wouldn't be, to me, wouldn't seem to be the most important motivation. To me, the most important thing would be getting everything on the record and getting a really full account of everything that happened that day. That would be the benefit of a trial. The negative, I think, would be the political consequences. Mm. I mean, as I've said before, you know, there could be a backlash to this, and Biden has, you know, presidents typically only have a short period of time to really get their agenda rolling. And it would be a shame for him if it was impeded by this, or if this led to a backlash that resulted in, you know, more Republicans elected to the House and Senate in 2 years.
Gino writes, the only unity I'm interested in is the unity between progressives, liberals, social democrats, whites, blacks, browns, Jews, women, and the LGBTQ community. That will take care of the GOP and its political gridlock in Washington, D.C. Michelle says, I listen regularly to your program and love it. Intelligent, thought-provoking, and fun, but I differ with those of you who think there shouldn't be an impeachment because Trump won't be convicted before we even hear the evidence. What other trial would be dismissed for this? We don't know everything yet. As one of your panelists said, there can only be reconciliation after justice.
I mean, that is certainly true. There could be, we could learn things that would point directly to Trump's knowledge of what was going to happen that day, that would be really damning and would really force Republicans to make a vote of consequence. The opposite side of that is that some of that stuff will probably come out regardless if there's a trial. You could hold off a trial until we know more. I mean, there are a lot of different ways that this could play out.
And Alan, I mean, it looked really, I mean, the evidence was really bad against him the first time, but that didn't really matter, did it?
I agree with that completely. And it's not going to matter this time. These people are political prostitutes. It's that simple. They know what happened. They were there. They saw it. It's disgusting. And it really just shows you the degradation of politics in this country, that they can just cast a blind eye on the whole thing. Yeah, they certainly saw it. They certainly know what happened. And they're not going to do anything about it. They've already signaled that.
Garrett writes, I'm hoping this vote was theater. Oh, I read that. I apologize. Let's go.
I'm sorry, Jerry. Can I just toss this at everybody? You know, I keep going back to comments that were made, noticing the difference between the response for the Capitol Police if this had been Black Lives Matter protest versus a Trump insurgency. And you know, I keep thinking, what would these senators have done if it had been a Black Lives Matter crowd and this was Obama that had been president and had ginned him up? You know, it just, that's where I really, I look at it and I think there's no way they wouldn't be prosecuting Obama.
But we have to get used to that hypocrisy, right? I mean, because, I mean, we shouldn't accept it, but we have, we just assume that exists.
Yeah, I can't get used to it. I acknowledge it's there.
There you go.
But I mean, it's just it just slaps you in the face when you really look at how they're condoning disparate systems in a country that's supposed to be a meritocracy where we're all created equal.
Kevin wishes us a good morning and says the Senate is pathetic, half this country is pathetic, and any attempt by the Democrats at quote unquote justice is and will be pathetic. Trump will walk away vindicated and be back in this public eye as the cult leader they grovel to, and in 4 years run on the same platform and the same hateful rhetoric again. And these cowards in Congress and the Senate will bow down to his mighty campaign money and wait for favors and some sort of payout before disappearing into the ether that is our democracy.
Maybe Joe, we know something, Joe. Today is the International Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Yes.
And we would all be well suited to take a few minutes and remember what that means and what the cost of fascism and autocracy is. Because we skated really close to a line that a lot of us thought we would never be able to cross. And my concern is that if we do nothing, then there's going to be a resurgence of this behavior. And, you know, we don't know how it's going to turn out next time.
Alan?
You know, we've received a lot of letters about the word impeachment. It's interesting because, as I have pointed out many times, impeachment is basically the indictment and the conviction is in the Senate. Nevertheless, a lot of people are using the word impeachment for good reason, because when we say impeachment to people in the United States, it means get rid of them. So I just want to say, loosen up, folks. Just loosen up a little bit. The Association of English Majors gets to be a pain in the neck sometimes.
Yeah, I think the letter you're referring to had a lot of exclamation points.
We had a lot of them.
Yeah. Jeff writes, to convict, this is, Sam, I'll throw this one to you, but to convict, is two-thirds of the whole Senate required or two-thirds of those that vote? My understanding, it was those who vote. There could be those who would slink off into the darkness.
Oh, no, you got to vote. Yeah, remember so the do you remember the Johnson time?
My understanding is it's two-thirds of the present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
my
remember the
two-thirds of those present. Yeah.
And remember the Johnson trial? They had that guy brought in on, I think, a sick bed. In order to vote.
Yeah. Get, well, let's see. Then we go to James, who says, do panel members truly believe Republicans are interested in reconciliation? They are not. They have no interest in bipartisanship, the rule of law, the Constitution. They care about power, keeping power, and putting money in their pocket.
Good letter.
Kippy says, Chris, this isn't political. It is ethical about our values. You are so wrong. I'm sure Kippy means it in a good way, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Or not.
Of course. Yeah.
Let's see.
You're wrong in just a constructive criticism, Chris. So don't take it personally.
You're wrong in the good way, Chris. Don't worry. Yeah. Deborah says, let Republicans go on the record that the outrageous behavior by Trump is okay by them. People need to be reminded of all the dastardly actions that resulted in dead folks, including the cops. Then let the GOP try to be the law and order party. I was listening to some of the coverage on this as if this event happened 3 years ago. You know, it was the 6th of January. We have to be reminded of what happened.
The news moves fast these days, doesn't it? It's amazing.
What I love is all of the apologists who are now saying this was a Democratic thing. They did it. All those thousands of people with the Trump signs and everything else, these were really secret Democrats. It's unbelievable what these foolish people will say.
That Oregon vote was amazing. And, I mean, in a horrible way. I just, you know... yeah, and the more time, obviously, a lot more conspiracies can be brewed up. Ricky says, one more letter and then we'll take a break. Ricky says, in the upcoming impeachment trial, the Democratic prosecutors will present the most damning evidence, including video evidence, to show what a despicable event the storming of our Capitol on January 6th was. This evidence will be so damning that Republican senators will have difficulty voting to acquit. Well, we hope.
Wrong.
Right?
Wrong.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue and we will go on and move on to other topics as well. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Sienna Freeman-Tolbert. And, of course, we welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Some more letters, and then we'll move on to other topics. Bill writes, I agree with Chris. The Senate trial could be delayed to allow more information of Trump's complicity to emerge. That's a great idea. Within a year, we'll not only know of how complicit Trump was in the right way, but also it had the violation of the Emoluments Clause and other grifting and self-healing. I'm not sure that's exactly what you said, Chris, but he agrees with you anyway.
Anyway, yeah, well, if he agrees with me, I'll take it. Anyway, we can worry about the details later.
Yes. From the Department of Apologies, we heard from
I can't
Leo.
Hear you, Alan. I don't know what...
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
The red button again.
No, it wasn't the red button. It was being foolish. For a change. Vera writes to us and says, not a good idea to insult your listeners. You should be educating your listeners, not insulting them.
How did we insult them?
I did.
Oh, okay.
I am not, capital letters, not an English teacher. Just a citizen who has read the Constitution like so many others. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult you by saying you were an English teacher.
Cue the letters from the English teachers now.
Yeah. There you go. Let's see. Michael says the governing quote unquote philosophy of these unprincipled Trump cult Republicans is unmistakably clear. Quote, democracy is fine for us as long as it is a mechanism for us to be in control. If we can't hold power, then to hell with rules and to hell with the system. Power doesn't flow from the will of the people. It flows from our will and our leaders' will. End quote.
And we're still getting letters from people who are saying, Joe, along those very lines, who are saying there should be a secret ballot because then the Republicans would have enough guts to vote for impeachment. Ladies and gentlemen, how do you have democracy defined as from the people? Democracy from the people. You cannot vote in secret and hold people responsible. It's that simple. Now, look, would I like to see him convicted? Absolutely. But I'm saying this is wrongheaded thinking in my mind. And, I'm sorry if somebody thinks I'm insulting them.
All right. So I have a question for you, Alan. This is from DW, who says, if something happens to Senator Leahy, there goes the Democratic majority, and here comes Mitch McConnell as majority leader. Is there a guarantee that the governor of Vermont, a Republican, would appoint a Democrat or an independent who always votes with Democrats?
Well, as Dr. Padilla, my dissertation advisor, used to say to me, Shartok, you better, you just better. And I think if he wants to stay governor, it would be a good idea to appoint a Democrat.
Anyone else?
But
on
there
that?
Is, but, Go ahead. But there's no requirement. There's no legal requirement.
Oh, no. No, he can appoint who he wants.
Yeah. And that's, you hit something right on the head about how thin a margin it is.
Well, not just for this reason, but for many other reasons, we wish Senator Leahy a very speedy recovery.
Indeed.
Martin says, there's too much work to be done. Why do the impeachment trial now? I've lived in the U.S. for over 17 years and have a math PhD in a U.S. research university from a U.S. research university. But somehow I've been unable to get a work permit for the last year. How about we sort out the pandemic, economy, and immigration reform? Then we can come back to the trial.
Well, that goes to the point I was speaking to. Is that this for a broad section of the country, especially? I know this trial appeals to the Democratic base, but I think to a lot of people in the middle, it's going to look like the Democrats are still obsessed about Trump, and why aren't they dealing with the real emergencies that Biden was elected to deal with? And I think that the sentiment in that letter, I think, is what the risk is in this trial.
The horse is out of the barn, as I've said before, Chris. I mean, the real problem here is it's done.
Well, put the horse back in. I mean,
around. Oh, yeah, sure. We were wrong.
We were wrong.
Give it a cube of sugar. Bring them back in.
We shouldn't hold them accountable. Come on.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but there are a number of expressions that are used pretty commonly that I just don't understand the meaning. And another one is, getting spaghetti to stick to the wall. You know, they're throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping, why does anyone want spaghetti on their wall? I've never understood that one.
It's a test of whether it's done or not. But the one that gets me is, peeling back an onion. All you get is a smaller onion. It's not like you get something different.
There are no surprises in that onion.
Spaghetti is a carbohydrate. It's not good for you.
So while we run it up the flagpole and see who salutes, how many people actually salute. Okay, enough of that. We go on to other letters. We go to Jeffrey, who says Trump is still referred to as Mr. President. It means he is still a U.S. president, just without authority. It is not just an honorarium. You take the oath for a life. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they all do. If you think about it, every senator and member of Congress and the president, I mean, they all swear to uphold the Constitution, you know, from enemies, both, you know, foreign and domestic. It's interesting when they're really put into in a position where they have to live by that.
Our news director, Ian Pickus, advises that the governor of Vermont is instructed to call a special election in the event of a federal vacancy. It can be on general election day if it's within 6 months of that date. He can make an interim appointment to the Senate, but that person would still be replaced by the special election winner, which, of course, can be the same person.
Yeah, but we're dealing short term here.
Right.
Ian is very appropriate to let us know about that. Nevertheless, this is all up front and close.
Indeed. Let's see. We'll go to Daniel, who says impeachment at this point is a waste of time. The senators that will vote do not care about what the public thinks. They're in their districts that will never lose no matter what. So why bother it going to, see, this is a good letter, and I don't mean to call out poor Daniel, but this is a really good example of a letter that needs some proofreading. But I'll try it again. The senators that will not care about what the public thinks in their district, that most will never lose no matter what. So why bother? It is just going to make the Democrats look like babies. And I think I got the tone of that letter right.
I actually disagree with that a little bit. I think if they actually thought they would never lose, they would vote for conviction. I think most of them are worried about being primaried. I think, you know, it's notable that the five who voted in favor yesterday all were either recently elected or in, you know, Romney's in a pretty safe district. I think Toomey's not running again. So, I mean, none of the people who voted in favor yesterday, none of the Republicans who voted in favor have anything at risk.
Susan Collins, Bob. Susan Collins.
Although, you know, Joe, isn't it funny, though, that we assume that the Senate can only do one thing at a time? Why the hell can't these people multitask? I mean, come on, give us a 40-hour work week, for God's sakes.
And by the way,
we can't do anything else because we're doing an impeachment. Bullpucky. You know, something that work the weekends and work the nights then.
No, but you got a certain state where they just elected, a Republican state where they just elected not one, but two Democratic senators. And I think that ought to be raised in response to the letter that nobody can ever lose in those states because they can.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing at the response. The GOP response to the loss in Georgia is, let's tighten up on voting to make sure people can't vote rather than taking a hard look at themselves and the platforms.
Let's see. We go to David, who says the Trump senators and others are asking us to just let the insurrection go and move on, you know, for unity. How many years did they investigate Clinton emails? 4 years? And then Benghazi, let it go? Mm-hmm. Exclamation question mark. All right. And we got this from Patrick.
I say not as I do.
And not to mention Clinton and what happened in the Oval Office. They spent time on that as well.
Right.
They could have just let that go as well. Alan's right, but just saying.
Yep. Alan is right, says Patrick. Trump and the Republicans who support waiving a trial should be held accountable for inciting a mob to attack the U.S. Capitol, sack it, and kill people in the process. If we want such behavior to be repeated, do nothing. And that's the big concern, right? I mean, that... Bob, that you just don't act on it at all.
That's not going to happen, though. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Bob.
It's not going to happen. No, it's going to happen.
No, go ahead, Chris.
It's going to happen. We're gonna learn all of the details. We're going to see it all. The American people will see it. Trump lost the election for a reason, that people got fed up with him, and this is just one more nail in that, even though these political prostitutes and from Republican red states are doing what they're doing. They're going to be held accountable. That's why it's so important we do this.
We touched on this yesterday, but Chris,
that wasn't my point. My point was that people keep saying that if there's no trial, that there's going to be no accountability for what happened. And I just don't think that's the case. I mean, many of the insurrectionists are going to be charged. Many of them are going to go to jail. There's nothing to say that even without this trial, that Congress can't investigate everything that led up to that moment. I mean, I think we're just making this a false either or. You can hold people accountable and also not have this trial.
What about the guy who sent them down there? We know who that is. That's Trump. Period.
Right, but we know there's not going to be a conviction there. So, I mean, you're going to have to find other ways to hold them accountable anyways.
That's one way to hold them accountable. Hold it up to the light of day and let everybody see it. It's what cost them the election because he behaved like such a fool and such a reprehensible lout. And that is one more reason that this is going to happen now, and I'm for it. I just think you're gilding the lily. If that's the right term, I have to check with my English.
Yeah,
friend.
Check with the English professor, but he pissed them off. But that's all right. Go ahead,
and
Sienna.
Remember that Trump is facing a consequence now, right? But the fact that this trial is going forward, Trump has to put forward a defense team. Trump has to figure out what their defense are. He has to pay people, attorneys. He has to figure this out. He is facing a consequence because he's facing this litigation in the Senate. And so, I mean, that is part of the process. If we just said no trial or anything, then he would just be hands up. He doesn't have anything else to do. Now we're paying for a Secret Service, the U.S. people. We're paying for him to be retired. We're paying for everything, his retirement, his benefits. We're doing all of that after he incited insurrection. So, no, there has to be consequences. Even if he's not convicted, we know that he's trying to put forth some effort in this trial to defend himself like any other defendant would have to do. And 40. I think that's important. That's an important lesson to teach our kids, to teach our teenagers. If you do something wrong, you will go to court and you will face consequences. You may be found not guilty, but you are going to go through the process. And I think that's important.
Bob, I got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
The only thing I can guarantee is that Donald Trump is not going to use a single penny of his own money to defend himself. This is why he's able to milk the rubes around him. So, I mean, I appreciate the comment, but Donald doesn't use his own money. He runs the Trump Ponzi scheme.
I want my 10 seconds, which is we love having Chris Churchill on our panel. He's wonderful.
Uh-oh. Well, okay, what did you do next?
Wow. Well, we'll get to the bottom of that one during the break and report back. Yeah. Alan Chartak, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org will return. First News with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartak, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Sienna Freeman-Tolbert. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Quick programming note, Governor Cuomo of New York State is expected to give an update on the state's COVID-19 response. We'll be making an announcement, and we will be doing that from Albany. We'll be going to that live at 11:30 this morning. Okay, let's go and move on to, I would like to talk about the Capitol Police for a moment while we've been talking about, obviously, the impeachment in the sense of the president's role in what happened on January 6th, but let us talk about some of the details here. The acting chief of the Capitol Police told lawmakers that the department knew days ahead of time of the risk of violence targeting lawmakers, but was unprepared when the mob attacked. Testifying by video conference to a closed session of a House committee, the acting chief of Capitol Police acknowledged that the department knew that there was a strong potential for violence, but failed to take necessary steps to prevent what she described as a terrorist attacks. Officers were outmanned, had poor communications, lacked sufficient supplies, and struggled to carry out orders like locking down the building. Her comments were the fullest accounts to date from the department about its preparations for and the response to the events of January 6th, when thousands of angry protesters, believing false claims that the election had been stolen, marched on the Capitol, urged on by President Donald Trump. Chief Pittman, who became acting chief after the riot, told members of the House Appropriations Committee, which oversees funding for the agency, that the Capitol Police, quote, failed to meet its own high standards as well as yours. She added, I am here to offer my sincerest apologies on behalf of the department. So, Bob, let me go to you first. This is your bailiwick. So what do we take from words like this?
Failed responses for 1,000, Alex. It's
may he rest in peace.
That's the truth. It's frustrating. A lot of the deficiencies that were identified in 2016 and earlier events obviously weren't dealt with. So we have some systemic issues that absolutely need to be addressed. In addition, though, the more I read about this, the more I am convinced that there's a combination of both inside help and just incredibly poor management. Whoever gave the orders not to deploy these resources, they really need to investigate who they've been speaking to and when. The fact that even when the call came in, it was delayed by 2 hours. I mean, could you imagine calling 911 and being put on hold for 2 hours? I mean, that's pretty much what happened to it. So to me, it shows that that we haven't made really good progress in the safety and security of some of our critical infrastructure, including our governmental buildings. And this is not something that they should sweep under the rug.
I mean, the big question is, why weren't they ready, even though they had advance notice? And it just leads, I mean, I'm not looking to be a conspiracy theorist here, but it does lead you to wonder about what was behind it, right?
Well, especially where every event is planned. I mean, they're having spent so much time in D.C. being involved both in local and federal government, there's a huge amount of planning and resource movement that goes into it. I mean, even for something that we knew was going to be peaceful, like the Rolling Thunder. I mean, you think about the motorcyclists, a huge number of resources that are brought in for these regular events. And then all of a sudden we have an event where there's known intelligence. They knew about this. The FBI knew about this. This should have triggered a whole different set of response and resources. And that's where we need to go back and find out exactly where the decision points failed and who's responsible for it. Because it's not just good enough to say, I'm sorry. You got to show us that you fixed it.
Anyone else on that, Chris?
No, I mean, just ditto to all of it. If you go back, those videos are still shocking to me. You watch just a thin line of officers just being overwhelmed by the size of that crowd. And you do wonder how they could have been so unprepared and who left them that way.
Let's see. We go to.
And I agree with you, Joe. I think.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Shannon.
I'll just agree with you, Joe. I think this all adds to the conspiracy theory, which may not be but where they spoke their fire, and it leads us back to the impeachment trial, right? What was going on in the background? What was ordered by the administration, maybe? What happened that, there was this disconnect for 2 hours? I think all of that is going to come into play. And I think that's why it's so important that you have a trial.
We go to Tony, who is chastising us. Tony writes, has anyone on the panel noticed that America has a new president? President Biden needs all the support the public can give him to move ahead. If the panel spent half as much time explaining what President Biden is trying to do instead of what Trump has already done, we might be able to move ahead with a better understanding of what can be accomplished to heal the United States of America. Chris, that was a deep sigh.
Yes. How did you know it was me? How do you know where the sigh is?
Oh, he's good. He's really good.
I recognized your inhalation.
That was very Rand Paul of you. Go ahead.
I don't know. I mean, I partly agree with them. I mean, that's partly what I was talking about with the danger of the impeachment trial, is that you're sucking oxygen away from what Biden wants to do and what Biden wants to talk about. But as a defense of us, I mean, this is the issue of the day, right? I mean, what are we supposed to talk about? It is too bad that everything is still focused on Trump 3 weeks after he's gone, or however many days it's been. Actually, not quite that long. But
1 week.
It is what it is.
Sure, let this guy who now has something like a 20-something percent approval rating get away with it. That's fine, you know. Well, you know, we don't need to hold people accountable, people who rob stores or anything else. And this is the example of it. No, we got to hold them accountable, and American democracy was really threatened here, and this is so important.
Well, and also it's what the United States Senate and the United States Congress are doing right now. So it's fair to report on that. that is what is underway, and we certainly have talked a lot about the Biden agenda as well. But anyway,
but with that said, I mean, there's some really neat stuff that is going on. I think the position that we're starting to take on rejoining the global community on climate change, on border security, on immigration, an awful lot has been done in a week. And as soon as Biden can get more of his team in place, I think that we're going to have lots to talk about.
And when he has something to say, he's on television. He does it. The news faithfully reports what he's come out with. It's not as if nobody is talking about what Biden is doing. They are.
Bill writes, I've not heard a single mention of how New York State investigations and Trump figure into the equation. Okay. Try Trump this summer. Use the time to compile charges. In the meantime, turn him over to New York State. Well, we have talked about that quite a bit.
We have. We have. Deal. And, Joe, it would be interesting to see what their thinking is, because clearly they're waiting till the impeachment thing debacle to be over before they do their thing.
Yeah, and people need to remember it is only a week.
You know? Right.
And you know, as much as you'd like to believe that, you know, the Thursday after the new president was sworn in, that it would be a Disney-esque moment of talking birds and happy dancing flowers, but it's not. It takes time. I do think that you will see something from New York State and maybe even from the city. I mean, it's coming. I mean, it absolutely is. Now, when? I don't know, but it's coming.
I mean, we had a letter on this yesterday of somebody wondering why it didn't happen at 12:01 on Wednesday the 20th. You know, so, I mean, obviously people are impatient, but we'll wait and see what happens. Let's see.
Well, I'm surprised he wasn't served with papers when he got off the plane in Florida.
Devin writes, let's just be plain and honest, because the right obviously can be. Had the insurrection occurred by Black Lives Matter and had it been this past summer, say July, no way that the Capitol Police and any other group assigned to protect the Capitol building and its people wouldn't be ready to do its job in a timely manner.
Including shoot people. You know that would be the case.
Sienna, I assume you agree with that?
I do. I agree. I agree. And that's why I am such a proponent of the impeachment trial, because I think it's very important. You keep talking about the optics of what it looks like, unity, but what does it look like to the individuals who were black, white, all different colors, marching on Black Lives Matter, and they were being harmed or hurt or, you know, dealt with very aggressively during the marches? They need to see that we're holding people accountable. That's what they need to see. Everyone needs to see this. That's the optics. So let's not talk about the 70 million. Let's talk about the 80 million who are so upset that they voted him out. And they need those optics, or else the Democrats might lose next time. So, you know, we have to think about both sides of the coin.
I do want to just correct something. We said earlier, Ray mentioned this during the newscast, and we said it once, but we're talking about Leahy being hospitalized, and I think gave the impression that he was still in the hospital, but he is home and was sent home after a brief visit to the hospital. So we've gotten a number of letters on that, so I just wanted to clarify.
And Joe, if I could, you know, for folks to say, oh, well, you know, panel, you're overreacting. Just take a few minutes and go back on YouTube and look at what type of coverage and police presence were on January 6th at the Capitol versus the police presence and the actions that were taken when Trump and Barr decided they were going to go waddle across the street and hold up a Bible. If you think about if you juxtapose those two events, you see such a huge difference that it absolutely points to something being rotten and something that needs to be reviewed and needs to be dug out of the system.
Nice use of the word waddle.
And yeah, and you know this question of Barr. Remember, do you all remember Barr? Remember him?
Yeah, remember him.
He was the Attorney General. Yeah, I'm just kidding, of course. Sarcasm alert. But here's what. Here's what. He got out of there in a lickety-split moment, and we all know it. Nobody quite knew what was going on. Now I think we have a pretty good idea of what he was doing and why he was being self-protective, because he didn't want anything to do with what was coming next.
You know, I forgot to mention this, too, Bob, as we were listening. I don't know if you heard Ray's newscast at the top of the hour, but they were playing a clip from Chancellor Malatris's State of the University report. That sounded like an exercise video. That was very cool. had a little drum beat it back to it. Nice little track underneath. Nicely done.
Running the risk of sounding like a suck up, I've actually been really impressed with the chancellor's transparency. And if you look at his social media presence and the way he's trying to communicate in a positive way, rather than, you know, getting up in the morning and looking at a tweet, you know, wondering when I'm going to slap my head. It's a nice change.
You know, more and more we are seeing people head universities who have political experience. And there's a reason for that, because they know how to play it. And I agree with you. I think Malatro's doing a terrific job. But remember, he comes from Cuomo. And also he brings us the ability to have the governor look with some favor on what's going on at the university. Right move.
Which is always good. And academia in general, I think sometimes we make an assumption that because you're a good researcher or a good teacher, that you're going to be a good leader and a good administrator, and the skills aren't necessarily the same. So actually, I'm a big fan of bringing people in who understand leadership and know how to manage. These are really complex organizations.
Boy, are you right. Boy, are you right.
Senator Leahy's office has sent a note saying that the Senate pro tem, Patrick Leahy, will open today's session at 10:30 this morning. So
wow.
There you go. That's good
news.
Well,
that's great.
Let's see. We go to Denise, who says, case in point, why were Capitol Police unprepared? Yes, this is a good reason for continuing with trial. Trump could well have been behind this, the stall. He sat in the office and watched. That brings us to Charlie's note, who says, to those who insist that Trump bears no responsibility for the attack on Capitol Hill, I say Osama bin Laden didn't fly any of the planes. That from Charlie. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do think there's a lot of evidence that Trump both knew and was refusing to give any assistance in all of this. So, yeah, I mean, you'd have to be, you know, not able to use all your functions not to understand that. I don't want to get into trouble.
Sienna, this one's for you from Casey. Sienna's so right. What it boils down to is, without a trial, this country is endorsing white supremacy.
Exactly.
Bill, go ahead. Go ahead, Sienna. I'm sorry.
I just not in my head, but no one can see it over the radio.
No, we can't, but that's all right. If you what you need is a red button.
That's the red button.
Jordan says, he says we need to hold Trump accountable. A pointless public spectacle will change zero minds. How is it that holding him accountable? Trump has been, is now, and will always be unaccountable.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
Yeah,
I mean, if New York goes ahead and they have criminal charges against him, that's not unaccountable, right? And if there's a impeachment trial, even if he's not convicted, people are holding him responsible by bringing it forth and bringing that information forth. Look, he lost the election, and he lost it by a lot. And there was a reason for that, because people got the idea.
Carol writes to us and says, I'll tell you the one good reason to bother with the charges and processes. One word, history. Trump will see that history will be written truthfully, regardless of how he wants to spin it.
Well, now that's an interesting question. There we don't really know how crazy the guy is. Does he believe his own stuff? In which case, you know, there's a difference as opposed to his being just a manipulator.
But how will historians look? I mean,
he'll say, well, history got it wrong. He'll say history got it wrong. You think Dick Nixon wasn't sitting up there in California saying history got it wrong?
Erica writes, perhaps the trial will engage the 150 million people who didn't vote. Maybe they will at least come out to vote against dictatorship in 2024. I think they are the most important audience. We need more engagement to keep this from ever happening again. I am much more engaged than I was because of this Jim Jones fellow. My daughter and her friends are as well, being 18 to 20 years old. Carolyn writes in the...
And I think that's an important point.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's an important point because in 4 years, we have a whole new influx of young voters, and they're watching this. They're very aware of what's happening right now. I think that's even the implications for them are important as well.
You're so right.
In 4 years, when it's their turn to vote.
You are so right.
Carolyn writes, in the words of Kamala Harris, we can multitask. Trump needs to be held accountable. We need to see the horrendous criminal acts that Trump has done and hold him accountable. Diane says, am I hearing that senators who were complicit in the insurrection get a vote in the impeachment trial? Question mark, exclamation point, question mark.
Hmm. Yes, that's exactly correct.
Yep.
And who were there and who were there and saw the whole thing themselves and now are denying it, blaming the Democrats. It's unbelievable.
Remember the picture of Holly walking in with his fist raised? I mean, he knew who he was talking to.
Well, I don't know if he knew what he was going to get as a result. I think he has really disgraced himself.
Agreed.
Do you think anything will come of it?
It's also
Holly disgracing himself.
I'm sorry.
Will anything come of Holly disgracing himself?
Well, I'm meaning will. I mean, there have been calls up for him, obviously, to resign. There have been calls for censure. There's been calls for the body as a whole to take action against him and Cruz and others. Do you think that is possible?
I think there's a possibility they could be censured. I mean, I think the best accountability for him will be, you know, the voters of Missouri to vote him out of office. Which they very well may do.
This is a guy who thought he was going to be president of the United States, you know.
Right.
I know. I mean, that's what was so cynical about the calculation that he was making. He was essentially, and I think I agree with you, Alan, that he didn't, you know, the riot was not something that he wanted to happen or thought would happen. I think he thought that he could kind of back the false election claims, kind of win the Trump base over and then face no consequences for it. I think the riot destroyed his plans.
Yeah, this idea that I didn't know the gun was loaded defense gets really, really thin. You know, going back to something I said earlier, I think one of the areas that we all need to really watch carefully is what's happening state by state with rules and laws that are going to be put in place to really make it difficult for people to vote. And that's what I expect to see in places like Texas and in Missouri, who are looking over their shoulders at what happened in Georgia and saying that we don't have the numbers, but we've got the power to make sure that the people with numbers actually don't have a voice.
And not only in Texas, but Georgia too.
Amen. Yep. George is definitely looking at that.
Meanwhile, an article in the New York Times this morning says the leadership of the Proud Boys has come under increased scrutiny as agents and prosecutors across the country try to determine how closely members of the far-right nationalist group communicated during the riot at the Capitol this month and to what extent they might have planned the assault in advance. That, according to federal law enforcement officials, at least six members of the organization have been charged in connection with the riot, including one of its top-ranking leaders, Joseph Biggs. Mr. Biggs, a U.S. Army veteran, led about 100 men on an angry march from the site of Donald Trump's speech toward and then into the Capitol building. The Proud Boys, who have a history of scuffling with left-wing anti-fascist activists, have long been some of Mr. Trump's most vocal and violent supporters, and he has returned the favor, telling them during one of the presidential debates to stand back and stand by. along with the right-wing militia, the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, was one of the extremist groups with a large presence of the Capitol insurrection, according to investigators. Despite having launched one of the most sprawling inquiries in American history, investigators have yet to unearth clear-cut evidence suggesting there was a widespread conspiracy to assault the Capitol on January 6th.
I think they hide the tracks really well, Joe, and I say that we continue to need to really dig in. The interesting thing about both the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys is that they've actually taken a lot of pages from the ISIS and Al-Qaeda playbook as far as use of social media, as far as non-traditional methods for command and control, including things like use of gaming platforms in order to communicate where law enforcement will have trouble getting to them. This is a serious issue. The rise of right-wing extremism is something that basically DHS was doing a lot of work in prior to the Trump administration. As soon as Trump administration came in, that work was stopped because it was work that was being done and part of the research facilities of DHS. We really need to go back and continue to be investigating not only this group but other groups. There's a number of militias in the West that are a clear and present danger to the Republic.
Now, what about the Antifa, Bob? That's my question. They keep raising Antifa, but I don't see much evidence of it. There may be a few kooks out there, but nothing like what we have on the other side. Nothing like what raided the Capitol the other day. What am I missing here?
I don't think you're missing anything. I think what they're trying to do is hold up Antifa as sort of a trying to say this is a mirror of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, and look, they're worse. I think all the way along they've been trying to link Antifa, which is, you know, isn't really a group. I mean, it's more of a philosophy, and with violence and the anarchists, you know, the anti-capitalists, the anarchists mm-hmm. that have a history of creating violence at demonstrations. Think about World Bank demonstrations, but. I just think it's one of these false comparisons that is purposely meant to throw people off the trail. I mean, it's the gaslighting that we've seen for the past 4 years.
All right, we have just a second here, so I will remind you that you can join in panel at WAMC.org, and we will have our last call right after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Last go round with our wonderful group this morning, Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Sienna Freeman Tolbert. We do welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org.
Joe, can I jump in with one comment about the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers? And this is something I hope everybody will remember. Don't view these people as, you know, as deranged hillbillies. Okay, they're not. They aren't the guy wearing the buffalo.
Well, that's not as much fun.
They are really. You see, and this is the problem, though. They're really sophisticated. They're incredibly well funded. They are technologically savvy. And we really have to start digging into and follow the money stream. I mean, they are being incredibly well resourced to do what they're doing, which is to cause mayhem. So don't discount these groups as if they're all wingnut crazies. They run incredible operations, scary operations. We have a great faculty member who is an expert on the Oath Keepers, and this is probably an area that would be worth more conversations, like how they work, how they deal, how they're almost like a cult. And the psychological elements of their recruitment and then retention.
Let's see. Anyone else on that? If not, I have just a couple of letters, and then we'll go on to another topic. Yancey writes.
I have a little something else on that. I agree with you, Bob, but we can't discount them and their ability to do evil. Nevertheless, they are evil, in my opinion, and therefore, and they are crazy. But you can be really nutty and still, you know how to work a computer.
It very much so. But no matter what, don't discount them.
They are
cunning. They are patient, we cannot take this threat lightly.
All right, let's go to some of the letters we have here, and then we'll move on in our final moments together. Yancey writes on this Holocaust Remembrance Day, "The rise of evil comes when good men do nothing." Bob writes, "Are senators expected to behave as neutral jurors in an impeachment trial? It sounds like this is not a requirement since the predictions are that they will vote mainly per party lines. I think we need some reform here."
Well, first of all, I'd like to know what the reform is going to be. Second of all, they all do have to raise their right hands and with the Bible or whatever else and say that they are going to do no harm and that they're going to be good people and they're going to use their consciences. Nevertheless, what reform are you talking about? How do you reform the politics of the nation?
Great point.
Yeah, I mean, it's an inherently political process. You're talking about politicians. I mean, the only way to reform it is to vote for better politicians.
So to the letter writer earlier who said, "You are not spending enough time talking about the Biden administration," we go to this story about the Biden administration.
Cool.
Seeking to buy 200 million more vaccine doses to be delivered through the summer, the White House also told governors they will get 16% more doses starting next week because of increased manufacturing. The Biden administration said Tuesday it was on the cusp of securing an additional 200 million doses of the two coronavirus vaccines authorized for emergency use in the United States. The purchases would increase available supply by 50%, bringing the total to 600 million doses by the summer. Because both products, one developed by Pfizer and the other by Moderna, are two-dose regimens, that would be enough to fully vaccinate 300 million people. An estimated 260 million people in the United States are currently considered eligible to receive a coronavirus vaccine. Although Pfizer and Moderna have initiated trials for children as young as 12, the results of which could be, which could expand that pool, of course. The deals promised by Biden would not immediately speed up vaccinations, but they would greatly boost his chances of returning the nation to some semblance of normalcy by late summer or even the fall. The president said Monday he expects the general public to gain access to shots by the spring, as he seemed to elevate his administration's goal from 1 million vaccinations a day to 1.5 million. Although aides said that was aspirational, and Biden drew back Tuesday to his earlier ambition of administering 100 million shots in his first 100 days, insisting it would be a good start. Biden, in remarks Tuesday evening, said he expected the additional doses to be delivered through the summer. He added, in a further effort to distinguish his approach from that of his predecessor, "This is a wartime effort." The other part of that is what he said yesterday was that the communication would be far stronger with the states on exactly how many doses they would be getting each week. So they would be able to plan better instead of saying you're going to get 350,000 and only get 200,000. Bob, thoughts on this?
It's the type of coordination that I wish had occurred, you know, a year and a half ago or a year and a quarter ago. It's the tight linking between the federal agencies and the states that was sorely lacking, which led to a lot of the negative competition among and between states for things like personal protective equipment and vaccines. So that's definitely absolutely a step in the right direction. This is going to be really hard, and what I hope and expect from the Biden administration is that they will continue to tell us the truth. That if they come out and they say, you know, we put a number out there, if they're not reaching it, we need to know, and we need to know why and what they're doing to fix it. Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, there's an old Army term. I wasn't in the Army, but it's FUBAR, you know, F-U-B-A-R, fouled up beyond all recognition, except it wasn't fouled. The problem is that on every level we have to get our stuff together here. Yeah. Look, I'm 79. I'm told now, go get it. You're entitled to get it. You go online, you can't find it. There's no way to sign up. Forget it, Buster. So I got to say, we've really got to figure out, nobody should feel sorry for me because I want everybody to have this thing. And unless we get it all together, we're not going to get there. So there's an awful lot of cross currents that people need to understand, and we got to fix it now.
So you weren't an Army Ranger? I guess that means you could run for senator from Arkansas if you weren't.
You good? It's a bad situation, and I picked up on that. I watched the president, and I watched him say, "Go back to a million as opposed to a million and a half," and then they had to back off on it and say it was aspirational. That's right.
Bob, I'm just picking up on something. I hope that they continue to level with the people. Are you concerned that they won't?
I'm concerned always that the default position for politicians is the CYA, that we've gone through a period where there has been no penalty for lying to the people. And I think that has led to, so many of the problems we're talking about today, but also so many problems with vaccinations and just basic health procedures. I mean, Joe, we hit 100 million global cases of COVID. Yesterday, we had over 4,000 deaths. But still, it's still simple precautions, washing your hands and wearing a face mask and remaining socially distant. Are treated as if it's a total infringement on people's rights and has become sort of political rallying cries. So yes, I am always concerned that the default position for the government is to try to spin the news to best suit them.
The reason I ask the question is because, I mean, one of the things the president said yesterday, and I certainly understand what you're saying, and I agree with you, but he also made the point over and over and over again to say, look, this is going to get worse before it gets better, and we don't know what's around the bend. We have no idea what's around the bend.
Yeah. And at the same time, he's trying to make sure that there's a vision of hope. And people are saying, okay, there could be a definite end to this, so the continued sacrifice isn't forever. It's more of a short period of time.
And Governor Baker did exactly the same thing here in Massachusetts when he gave a State of the State last night, which we covered, by the way, which we carried, and said it's going to get worse, and yet there's light at the end of the tunnel. What else can you say?
Right. And, I mean, obviously, go ahead, Chris.
One thing I think is worth saying, we here in the United States are frustrated with the rollout. We're frustrated with the way how slow this is happening. But it's worth noting that the wealthier countries in the world are getting the majority of vaccines. We're actually way ahead of most of the world, and it's great that Biden is apparently going to secure 200 million more vaccines. But that doesn't mean that there's not going to still be a shortage all around the world. And, one of the things that could be done to kind of alleviate that shortage, one of the things that countries like India and other third world countries are really pushing for is the release of the patent rights on these vaccines so that generic versions could be made available. And I mean, and that is probably the only way to get the vaccine to kind of the worldwide community.
All right. We have about 2 minutes here before we have to go to a break. And I want to, it's not that bad. It's fine. We want to also go to the story about the CDC on schools. The CDC finds scant spread of coronavirus in schools with precautions in place. Schools opening in person have seen scant transmission of the coronavirus, particularly when masks and distancing are employed, but some indoor athletics have led to infections and could be curtailed if schools want to operate safely. That, according to researchers from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that they concluded in papers that they published Tuesday. So there's that little bit of information. There's also the governor's push in New York State to introduce, perhaps in some districts, high-impact sports, and not actually saying that he was going to do it or the state should do it, but basically punting it to the county health departments. Boy, aren't they happy, I bet. But, so what do you do with that information?
That is so dumb. Why would you take a chance?
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand why people have to go to school, right? We do know that. And we do know there are going to be tremendous repercussions from kids, including my three grandchildren, who can't go to school right now because we know what socialization is and we know how important it is and we know what it is. So it's important to open those schools as soon as we can. But high impact sports, what? What could he be thinking?
At the same time, you know, the governor can't have it both ways. He can't talk about the lack of coordination and leadership from D.C. when he kind of punts on this. And I did feel like it was a punt. And at the same time, the local health departments really could use some overarching direction from state health and from the governor's office. They're not getting it.
As one county health official said to me, okay, like we didn't have enough to worry about.
Amen, right there. That sums it up right there.
Like we were spending all our time in the nursing homes and the prisons, and now, oh, by the way, we have to worry about high impact sports. Okay. And obviously getting the shout out to as many people as possible in the community, which is a difficult thing to do. But the overall,
although it was good that the CDC report was good news. I mean, the caveat though, and this is for everybody, remember, you got to continue to use the basic precautions that the CDC has been saying. So we can't let up. We have to make sure that the protective equipment is there, that the sanitizers are there, that the same level of concern that we've been showing has got to stay. If we let down even a little bit, you're going to start to see those numbers climb in ways that are going to be completely unacceptable.
Chris, you have a minute.
Yeah, I mean, on the schools thing, the governor has been talking a lot about following CDC regulations and listening to science. And the CDC said pretty directly yesterday that the kind of high-risk sports are not safe. So it'll be interesting to see whether the governor retreats on that position or not.
And we'll find out more at 11:30 this morning.
Perhaps.
Will be. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Exactly. Sienna, 40 seconds. Anything?